Well, hello, you're listening to Funeral 614, where we explain the fun in funerals, factual, useful, and noteworthy information. I am your host, Lori Diaz, the Funeral Chick, and we are hosting another episode of our mentoring series. You know, January is the National Mentoring Month, and so we are spending some time with people who I consider my mentors in the funeral industry. I recently read an article, and the article talked about qualities to look for in a mentor. It said a mentor is a person who desires to develop and help others. A good mentor is sincerely interested in helping someone else without any official reward. Good mentors do it because they generally want to see someone succeed. I thought that that was like very important, because when you have a mentor, you want that person to walk with you along the journey, but you want them to see you succeed and you want them to be happy about those successes. It said a mentor possesses the ability and availability to commit real time and energy. So you want a mentor who's available and accessible. It also said that a mentor has a current and relevant industry and organizational knowledge. So you want someone who has expertise and or skills. And so those make up the best type of mentors. It also said that a mentor is willing to share their failures and both their personal experiences. That's important because you want a mentor who can tell you what didn't work for them so that they can take you along the journey so that you'll know what does work. So I thought that that was very key in the article. The last thing that I thought was important that the article brought out was that a mentor has a growth mindset and a learning attitude. So just because they're the mentor doesn't mean that they don't have the ability still to learn and grow. And so today's guest, I think she fits all of those qualities, and I'm going to tell you about her. And one of the things that I have learned is that she is just dope. Before I even read some information about her bio, she's just dope. And so one of the things is she is a native from Dallas, Texas, and she is a graduate from Hampton University with a bachelor's in molecular biology. When I read that, I'm like, my head just starts spinning on that one. But then she didn't stop there. She has a master of science endocrinology. And I was like, I had to look up that word too. I was like, whoa, she's kind of deep. But one of the things that she also did was she graduated from Dallas Institute of Funeral Service. And so she is a licensed funeral director and embalmer. She also she's the CEO of Mansfield Funeral Home. And what I found out about Mansfield Funeral Home is that it was the number one rated funeral home in Texas for 2018 and 2019. That's pretty impressive. And also it's 100% solar power. So I can't wait to talk to her about that. And so today I want to welcome Christy K. Moore to Funeral 614.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you allowed us to come. We are actually on site taping at Mansfield Funeral Home. And when I tell you the funeral home is beautiful, the pictures just don't do it justice online. It's phenomenal. It's gorgeous and it smells good. You walk in, you're like, this is like almost like a house. And I think that is the intent when you come in. You really want to feel homey, especially when you're doing something for your loved one. And so this is an awesome, beautiful establishment. I'm so proud of her, and I can't wait to for our listening audience to get to know her a little bit better. So I have some questions for you.
Okay.
And so one of the things that I always ask is people to tell me, if they say, who's Christy K. Moore? I read that on paper, but I'm sure there's some stuff on here that you would like to tell us that's not on paper. So who is Christy?
Okay. So I am a 41-year-old native of Dallas, which is specifically Oak Cliff. Okay. Born and raised here, and I'm a wife of almost 3 years. I have a daughter that's going to be 14 soon.
Ooh, teenager.
Yes. I sing at church. I love to skate, you know.
Got a pearler here.
Yes. And I just love serving God's people, specifically in the capacity of the funeral service industry.
So what kind of got you, everyone also has a funeral service story. Mm-hmm. So what would you say set you on the path for funeral service?
So my great-grandmother, her name was Dolores Redmond. We called her Lolo. She helped my parents raise my brother and I. My brother's 3 years younger than me. My parents were young when they had us. So while they were out working and providing, my great-grandmother helped raise us. Mm-hmm. And we were told 3 years before she died that she had colon cancer. So since she was the glue of our family, right. I saw my family go through the anticipatory grief that we learned about in school. So mm-hmm. as a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, I see my family happy one moment, sad the other moment. So I was really able to see that firsthand. And then we were actually there when she passed. So I experienced that with the paramedics coming in and trying to revive her. I was 9 at the time. And then the next day we went to the funeral home. It was in Dallas and my family was making arrangements. And so I had to go to the restroom, but I made the wrong turn and ended up in the prep room.
Oh, wow.
So I actually stood there and watched them embalm her. So I saw, you know, the blood and I saw all the things that go along with embalming. And a couple of days later, I saw her in the casket, beautiful with the flowers, fully dressed. And I saw the funeral directors, you know, dressed up. And I saw the hearse and I saw all the things that went along with, you know, providing the funeral service. Mm-hmm. And so when we were at the in the cemetery at Singing Hills in Dallas, she was going into being lowered into the ground. I asked my dad, you know, what is that person called who took care of Lolo? And he said, that's a mortician. And so from that day, March 11th, 1988, I knew I wanted to be a mortician.
Wow, wow, mm-hmm. wow, wow. I find it always interesting to hear people's story because everybody's story of how they enter into funeral service mm-hmm. is different. Everybody has a different way of how they entered, but they all seem to have, at least the people I'm connected to, all seem to have that same passion for funeral service
yes.
because I think that you really have to have the passion for the industry because this isn't something that you can just wake up and say, I think this is what I'm going to do today.
Right.
It's like, once you're in. So one of the things I see here is that you also received an award for being an honoree for the 100 Black Women of Funeral Service. So what do you think females in this industry, what would you say kind of has been our role and our turning point in this industry?
You know, that's interesting. So when I told my parents when I was 9 I wanted to be a mortician, I stayed with that. And so anybody that you run across that knows me from back in the day, every single person will say, you've been saying that for years, you know. And so when it was time for me to make a decision on after high school, what I needed to do, my parents set me down and said, we understand that this is your passion. But right now in 1996, there aren't a lot of women mm-hmm. in the industry, especially in the Dallas. There were a few. Right. But there weren't enough for my parents to feel confident in that being my only mm-hmm. thing that I did.
Right.
So I grew up being told that women are inferior, you know, and they didn't mean to say that, but they were just saying we are not as successful as men at right. that time. And so throughout, you know, the early 2000s, you know, 2005, 2006 is really when women started to realize, hey, mm-hmm. we can do this. We have the innate capacity right. to provide the compassionate service that a lot of men don't really have. Because when you look at funeral homes, usually who do the men put in front
uh-huh.
to handle the families, to handle the flowers, to walk the families in and out? They put the women in the front.
Right.
Because we have that gentle touch.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So our turning point was when we decided and when we realized our own worth in this industry. So right. I say it was probably maybe 10 years ago when women as a whole
right.
decided we can do this. And that's when we started to see in the mortuary schools where the enrollment started to turn towards mm-hmm. more women going into the
right.
into the industry. So does that answer your question?
Yes,
okay.
It does. And that kind of helps me to segue into the fact that you used to teach
mm-hmm.
At the local mortuary school here. And so did you see in that period, did you see women in the classroom then? Or was it still when you were teaching, maybe it was still male dominated?
So great question. So I was there 2008 through 11. At that time, it was really the turn. So I was usually the youngest one. Even when I was teaching, I was the youngest one in the room,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as being a woman. And that's when I founded the organization Women in Black, because I wanted the women to have a platform and a safe space to talk
Right.
You know, to kind of talk about the issues that we may or may not have interacting with men in the industry. So that's why I founded that organization, which is still going on to this day. And I wanted them to feel like they had, you know, a voice. So that's what my platform was while I was there teaching at Dallas Institute.
Well, I think for this industry, when we talk about mentorship, sometimes we don't want to share information.
Right.
Or we don't want to give away what we call trade secrets. But it's nice when you find someone that you can pick up the phone and you can say, I'm having a problem with X. And they say, oh, I've had a problem with X, and this is what you do, Lori. And so I find that with you, when I first opened, I was able to pick up the phone and say, Christy, we walk by faith here, girl. What am I supposed to do? And it's like you told me some fundamental things that I have remembered these last 2 years. And one of the things you were like, we talked about tithing. You're like, okay, know what the profit is and make sure that you are doing right when you're in church as well. So that was one of the things that I remembered and have taken to heart. But another thing that I have found with mentorship, sometimes you don't always have to see them all the time. Sometimes you can just be watching from afar and catch nuggets and pieces. And so I've been able to do that just with a post from you or just simply watching how you handle your social media and things that you kind of post on the funeral home website. So I wanted to personally thank you in January for being my mentor. And when I opened the funeral home on the back of our program, on the back it lists people who I consider mentors, and your name is listed.
Really? Oh, that is so sweet. Can I add to the mentorship aspect? Uh-huh. One thing about mentorship, people want to say there's, you know, secrets to the trade or what have you. I don't really believe that. Mm-hmm. What's important is that you walk by faith.
Right.
Because this is a ministry. Mm-hmm. So first of all, if you're in this industry specifically to make money, then even if you make that money, you can just as quickly lose the money.
Right.
If your intention Absolutely. Is not there, you know? So the key for mentorship for me is to allow myself to be open for people to feel comfortable calling me. And I tell them, this is my opinion. This is based on my experience. Take this, pray about it, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So mentorship is not always about, like you said, you don't have to be in front of them. You don't have to physically hold their hand. But for them to feel comfortable messaging you at 3:00 in the morning
right.
because you have an issue and they don't feel like you're judging them. They feel like that you're giving them the most honest answer possible. That's what the pure essence of mentorship should be. And that's what I try to do with everybody that I encounter.
Who do you, what do you think you would say that a mentor might have told you that you would want to share? What do you think that you can kind of remember that they kind of shared along this journey?
Listen, I've had so many mentors. It's majority men, actually, because I came up when it's male dominated.
Right.
But I've had mentors that teach me about the financial aspect. That's why I was able to tell you about putting 10% to the side for emergency savings, 10% mm-hmm. aside for tithing. You know, I learned that from a very successful funeral home owner. Mm-hmm. Other mentors talked to me about just communicating with my vendors, making sure that I've established relationships with my vendors. So if times ever got sticky, mm-hmm. they understood that I've already established that I will take care of it when I need to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Something else is...
And that's critical.
Yeah.
The relationship with vendors
Absolutely.
Is critical.
Because if they only hear from you when you need something, mm-hmm. or if you're in a bind, they're not going to be, you know, so willing to help you when needed.
Right.
And then another thing would be taking care of myself. So I've seen so many funeral home owners, they have worn themselves in the ground. They look 20 years older than they really are. They haven't taken any vacations.
Right.
Their spouses are upset because they're not spending the time that they should with them. Their children are not happy with the fact that their families own the funeral home. And so I make sure that I take care of myself spiritually, physically, emotionally, you know, when it comes to massages or my hair or whatever I need
right.
to stay grounded. Because if I'm not good for myself, I'm not good for my family or right. those who I serve.
Right. And so that kind of goes to the work-life balance because as moms, you know, your mother, your wife, mm-hmm. owner, mm-hmm. You're also involved in church.
Yes.
And so how do you, when I opened the funeral home, I was intentional on making sure that I was not going to be that funeral director who never could take a vacation.
Right.
Who never could leave the, like, I worked for a firm and I don't think they went on vacations because mm-hmm. it was like they couldn't leave.
Right.
And so I kind of was intentional to say, I'm going to put things in place that I can feel like I can leave and still be able to enjoy my family. Because I was sharing with another person that when I first started, I was so attached to funeral service mm-hmm. that I kind of missed my daughter's middle school years.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's one, if I had a regret, that would be the one thing that I didn't do, that work-life balance. So how have you kind of placed, how do you balance that now as a new owner? How do you balance that?
Well, I was a single mom for a long time. So I definitely trained my daughter, Kennedy, to be okay with one moment I'm here laughing and talking with you, next minute I've got to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I've keep communicating with her that this is the job that I have chosen. It does not replace you. This is what I have to do. So we constantly have that conversation. My husband, Michael, I made sure when I got married again that I married someone that understood and would not try to stifle, you know, my growth because mm-hmm. they physically needed me there every single moment. He's not like that. You know what I'm saying? So I just put things in place. My family had, I don't want to say trained, but my family for sitting down for Christmas dinner.
And next minute you gone.
And I'm gone. And it happened this year. I had a service on New Year's Day, you know, and I have a very close-knit family, but they know, don't give me grief about having to leave because this is what God has placed in my heart to do. So
right.
It's all about communicating with those around you mm-hmm. so that they have no choice but to respect what right. you have to do. But I make sure I don't take advantage of that. So I used to teach my students, don't pretend like there is a first call in the middle of the night just so you can go out and disrespect your household.
Right.
Make sure you maintain that level of security that they need from you and that you need from them.
Absolutely.
So that it'll work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am segueing into another question. And so it's kind of a off the cuff question, but mm-hmm. I like to ask it. So if you could curate a funeral museum gallery, what would you put in it?
Wow. A funeral museum gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I have actually a fan in my office where it was a funeral fan that called African Americans colored.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, the kind of shows the change of the times. I would put as many awards won mm-hmm. by women in there so that men and women after us can see that right. even though it started off as a male-dominated industry, that women have definitely made their mark in the industry. I would put pictures of old embalming machines mm-hmm. so that people would see how much we've evolved.
Right.
That's a great question. Just things so that people after us can see how far we've come.
Okay.
You know, I don't think that we've done a really good job. Our generation has done a really good job with saving things just in general for kids, for people after us. So all they know is what they see now.
Right.
They don't really understand what we had to deal with and make work
right.
to get to the technology that we have now.
And that makes sense because I am a single licensee. So I have a funeral director's license mm-hmm. and I actually have a trade embalmer. But hearing you talk about you know, past things, there are some things that I even could teach even my daughter just because I can teach her the funeral director side. But
right.
there's also another aspect that that she would need to learn or that they would need to learn.
That's right.
And so I liked how you answered that. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what would the title of your autobiography be?
The title would be Walked by Faith, Not by Sight.
Nice. Now, why did you choose that?
Because I've always been on a faith journey,
uh-huh.
And I understand how important it is for me to remain on that, more so when I deviate from that.
Right.
So everything that I do, every conversation I have, every mm-hmm. appointment that I set, even when people walk through my door to sell me something, I'll listen to them, but then I'll say, let me pray about it first.
Mm-hmm.
So 99% of the things that I do mm-hmm. is prayer and making sure that it is
confirmation.
Yeah, confirmation. It goes along with my faith journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that 1% where I forget or I get too busy, what have you, I always come back and I'm like, oh my, why did I not pray about
right.
it? So everything I do is a faith walk.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Now, We've talked about you being in the funeral industry, but did you work any other jobs other than funeral service?
I did. So back to my parents. So they were like, listen, you're not going to just go get your associates. You're going to go to college first. You're going to enjoy the college experience, get your bachelor's degree, and after that you do what you want. So went to Hampton, worked there. I worked at the morgue. VA morgue. So that's really where I start my funeral industry stuff. Okay. I worked in a morgue. They worked at a funeral home in Hampton. Uh-huh. Well, between Hampton and Tennessee State, where I got my master's, I worked for the FBI. So I worked as a DNA 2 scientist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was really, really good because I love math and science.
Okay.
So I did that. And then I went to Tennessee State. I actually waitressed at Houston's in Nashville.
Okay.
I waitressed at Bennigan's before they closed. Mm-hmm. Moved back here, worked for the Dallas County Crime Lab. And then that's where Mr. Madison from Evergreen, I met him. He was picking up death certificates and I was coming out of the morgue.
Okay.
And that we started talking. He said, listen, your personality, you could really do some great stuff at my funeral home. Why don't you quit this job and come work for me? And I'm like, what? So Dallas County Crime Lab, then went to Evergreen. I managed Evergreen. And then I was offered a job with Waffle House. To work on the corporate side.
Wow. So I love Waffle House.
I love Waffle House, right? So I was at a service and the manager came to me and said, hey, I love the way you're interacting with families. I can triple your salary if you come work for me, but you have to come work immediately. Mm. I'm like, well, where am I working? He said, Waffle House. I'm like, I'm not working at Waffle House. Are you crazy? You know? So he had me come and work one Saturday and they offered me triple my salary.
Wow.
Went back to Evergreen. And Mr. Madison, like, listen, you're 23, go make the money, but your heart and where you need to be is here.
Service.
So you're going to be back. So I actually went to Waffle House and then taught high school and middle school after that. Couldn't deal with kids. I didn't have any children at the time. It was too much for me. So I worked for Dallas Institute. Then moved to Oklahoma, taught some college there, worked at a funeral home there, and then came back, worked for SCI, and then now I'm on my own.
Okay, I told you, everybody always has a funeral story, and sometimes it's like, I call it being bit by the funeral bug, because sometimes you get in the industry, and you do, I mean, I've had that experience where I tried to work somewhere else, and it never gave that same satisfaction or fulfillment that I have in funeral service. So funeral service really has been the longest career that I have had. And my husband teased me because I've had a lot of different careers.
Right.
But this is the longest. This is the one that I'm most passionate about. And so I can tell that this really is where God has called me to be. And so I am excited to hear about your journey as well. I got some more questions. I know you.
Hey, let's do it.
Let's see. How about if you would tell me, what do you do? We talked about the like having a massage. But what else do you do to kind of... to detach from here? Because sometimes we're on 24/7, and as an owner, you're on more than 24/7 because you even go home and you're still playing stuff, you're running
bills,
numbers, you're
lights,
yes,
employees,
yes, everything is always running. So how do you unplug just for a minute to kind of how do you center?
I get in the car and I say I'm leaving it here. It's just that simple. I do breathing exercises. Before I go to bed, I do my best to make sure my mind is clear. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I'll clear my mind and get a death call and I'm up and running again.
Right.
So I talk to myself. I intentionally talk to myself. I remind myself of the importance of being present with my family at home and, you know, present here. I can't bring any drama that I may have outside of the funeral home here because it would affect my ministry with my families. And I can't take anything that I'm dealing with here home because it'll affect my family. Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly talking to myself. And there will be times that I miss the mark. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my frustration with a family or something may bleed into my conversation with my husband or my daughter, you know, and once I realize it's not them, it's me or me not, you know, being in the right headspace, I correct it and I apologize and I move on. But it's a daily thing because we have to be careful not to take on the grief of the families that we're serving. Our employees may have something going on. So just separating it.
How do you think I mean, we're at dealing with a marketing sometimes to a different generation. So we were talking one time about kind of marketing to like the millennial group. What do you see that we can kind of be doing different to kind of bridge the, you know, to kind of help bridge the gap? Because I think they need to maybe consider having a career in funeral service. So would you advise them kind of what your parents did to say, hey, go get the college experience? Or would you kind of say, if it's in your heart to do, you know, here's the route. Which way would you do?
Listen, funeral service will always be here. I've had employees that have come and gone that came out of corporate jobs that wanted to quit their corporate jobs to work at a funeral home full time. And I tell them, like, listen, this industry is not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Unless you know for sure that ownership is what you want to do, no matter how good you are, you're never going to be paid for the talent that you may have unless you own the funeral home.
Correct.
The best thing for anybody to do, in my opinion, is to enjoy college first. Those 4 years is the opportunity for you to live your best life. Right. You're just a student.
Right.
That is before you get into the real world will always be here.
Right.
Enjoy, at least get your bachelor's. Because let's say something happens in the industry where you have to get out for whatever reason, you have to have something to fall back on. And these days, an associate's is not going to get you what you want or may not provide the lifestyle that you want to lead. Mm-hmm. No knock on associates, but times have changed.
Right.
So if you have at least your bachelor's, you have that to fall back on, right? So I always say, go get your bachelor's. And then after that, if you want to come into the industry, come into the industry. But if I could do it all over again, I would have worked at a company. I would have my 401k set up better than I have it now. I would have a retirement plan. I would have possibly a pension. You know, I would have more benefits, a benefit cushion than what I had because I was so focused on owning a funeral home that I just kind of didn't really pay attention to that.
Right.
So don't be in such a rush to be in the industry. You can always have a corporate job with benefits and everything and work funerals on the weekend. Because most corporate jobs, you don't work on Saturdays or Sundays, or you can work at night.
Right.
You know, don't put all your eggs in this funeral service basket.
In one basket.
It doesn't mean that you don't love it.
Right.
It just means you're being smart with your time and your talents.
Right. I think when I think about my funeral service journey, it was kind of the same. I already had schooling was done and then found out about funeral service or wanting to kind of pursue funeral service. So I was already, you know, kind of had finished school, and I'm glad that I did that because, like you said, there was an opportunity where I was out of the industry and I did need to have something else to fall back on. And I was grateful that I had that, those skill sets.
Absolutely.
Let's see. How about if you could be, it's my off-the-cuff question again. Mm-hmm. If you could be an animal, what would you be and why?
An eagle. Yes. Okay. So I love eagles. The name of the company is Accipiter Day LLC.
Okay.
Or DBA, Mansfield Funeral Home. And that is because I love eagles. I love the resilience of eagles. Mm-hmm. I love how, you know, they fly above, you know, everything. They don't allow, you know, things to affect them. They have their own path. They are not concerned with anything else that's going on except for how the winds are blowing. You know, so that's my thing.
I like eagle. That. Mm-hmm. You'll make me go back and research some eagles and kind of, because I remember, I think it was a sermon they were talking one time about eagles and how they build their nest is kind of interesting too. Mm-hmm. And how they teach their young to fly.
That's right.
Is interesting as well. Who would you credit as a mentor now? Like, who do you have other people in the industry that you consider still mentors that you still kind of get in touch with? Or is it something that you do weekly, monthly, or just as need basis, or you kind of go out to eat with just to kind of chat it up with? How do you treat your mentor-mentee relationship?
So those who I credit for helping me along the way that I would actually give them the title as a mentor would be Alan Jean Madison, Evergreen, Clifton Maxfield, Evergreen. They both took me under their wing and just helped me along in the Dallas market. So I'll be forever grateful for them.
Right.
My former father-in-law, Edward Wynn Sr., awesome. He was excellent. Timothy Butler out of North Carolina. Excellent. Chandra Jennings here in Dallas. Excellent. Tanya Cunningham. She, I actually came in after her at the Dallas Institute. She was the first woman that I was able to actually physically put my hands on and talk to. You know, I've always looked up to women like Sandra Clark, who's in Dallas. John Beckwith is excellent in the industry. He allows me to, you know, talk to him. Well, before ownership, now that I'm an owner, we don't talk as much.
Right.
But when we see each other out and about, you know, he's open to talk. Even if I haven't mentioned them, just anybody that I can pick up the phone,
right,
you know, and call, I'm, you know, very appreciative.
And that's one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to start the podcast is I found that there wasn't anything that actually had women that kind of talked about our industry, and there wasn't any there wasn't anything that really kind of catered to African-American women in funeral service also. So that's one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to make sure that we are out there to show that we are.
Two more people. Shawn Newbern.
Yeah, out of California.
Yeah.
That's actually where I think that's where I actually kind of connected you first, because I think you guys were doing seminars together.
Yes. We should write together. Listen, Shawn has helped me tremendously. And then Monica Gray out of Chicago.
Yes.
I have to say those two.
I think that was kind of how we kind of met, was kind of, it was going to be a conference that we were supposed to go to.
I'm still waiting on my money for that conference.
We were going to the conference, but then we started talking after it kind of fizzled. We were like, girl, what was that? And that was actually, I was telling my husband, that's kind of what started the relationship, because it actually, I was telling my family, I just met Christy at the Chicago convention. I was like, we had never physically like met.
That's right.
So we hugged like, hey.
That's so funny.
I was like, but I felt like I've known you forever, but physically meeting you was in Chicago.
An ordeal. And you know what? Let me say, and that is one reason why people don't trust morticians specifically. That's why women don't really talk to women in the industry. And that situation right there, not to really harp on it, that is was a turning point for me. Said, Lord, if you ever bless me with the opportunity to own my own or manage or whatever is meant for me, I will never, ever allow that to happen to somebody else.
Right.
That was horrible.
And I think that was my, even as I became an owner, one of the things I said is, Someone took the time to teach me. And so if someone has questions, I'm not going to be, you know, one of those that are, I'm not telling you.
I
will tell you. I will even help you. I think, because I feel like what's for me is for me, and I'm not going to, I don't have time to sit there and be, you know.
That's enough for everyone.
Back, yeah, and hold back information. That just doesn't make sense. Now, one of the things I love about you also is that we always banter, because we're both in two sororities. And so don't you think that that also has something that helps in funeral service as well? It's kind of like almost like the sisterhood piece of funeral service. But how do you fit that in? Do you fit that in into your activities, or are you Are you not active? Which one?
Listen, I'm active. I am not financial.
I got you.
When I was financial, I was only able to make it to one meeting.
Right, because it's
Saturdays is not the time.
It's difficult.
Yeah, so
I'm finding that difficult.
But I still do my community service.
Right.
I still, you know, serve as much as I can financially through. If one of my line sisters says, "Hey, we need this," I will, you know, support that way. I do plan to get back into.
Was that at Hampton?
No, I pledged here. Metropolitan Dallas alumni.
Okay.
Of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated.
You know, she had to put that in there, right?
So, Founders Day's coming.
I love it. I love it. And ours is coming as well. 100 years. We are joining the Centennial Club.
Finally. Welcome.
Finally. Oh, wow. One of the things I find interesting about our industry is that I've seen a growth of funeral homes now that are really trying to give back more community service. So can you talk about what Mansfield has been doing in the community?
Sure. So we are always doing our best to give back. This past summer was very heavy for Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex as far as gun violence. Mm. And so I just put it out there on Facebook that I was willing to pay for or provide a free casket and to waive my basic service charges to be able to help families who lost loved ones as a result of gun violence. And it just went viral. I mean, we were on the TV, radio, oh, and wow. That really was my intent was just to put it out there and just mm-hmm. bless whoever I could. So we do that. We have pre-need seminars at churches. We go into home health hospice companies mm-hmm. and talk to families. I've gone into different organizations just to educate. This is the thing. I go into educate first. If the people that I'm talking to see my heart and they understand my mm-hmm. Intention, then it will be placed on their heart to utilize my services.
Right.
You know, I don't lead with I need your business. I lead with I want you to be educated. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of let it go from there.
I love that. And so how do our listeners reach you? How do they reach you?
Okay. So we are in Mansfield, Texas. Our number is 817-453-3009. My cell phone number, which I have no problem giving out, is 972-805-7844. Our website is mansfieldfuneralhome.com, and we serve the entire DFW Metroplex. We're very well known for ship-ins from other states, and we do ship-outs both domestically and internationally.
Well, I got one last question, mm-hmm. and then we're finished. And what do you see yourself, what would you like to see yourself in 5 to 10 years? What's your gauge on, your pulse on that?
I plan to definitely be in other parts of the Metroplex. I'm actually launching a new company in about 6 weeks called Peaceful Pets, where we are also going to serve families when they lose their loved ones, which are pets, because people believe that their pets are their family as well. And I agree with that. So we are actually in a separate company. We are going into the pet world as well.
Well, I can definitely relate after having to put to sleep an 18 and a half year old
oh, wow.
fur baby. Just in September of 2019. So even in the industry, I kind of was at a loss of what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's very, very much needed and very compassionate. And it's a great industry and a loving heart for you to be able to serve people, because we do treat our fur babies. Some of us treat our fur babies better than our real
Listen.
Kids.
My mom's dog died. I'm like, wait a minute. Did I die today? But I think that's Listen. Great. Everyone has their own level of connection. So
Right.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. And I am so proud of you. I am proud of the step out on faith that you've done at home and just traveling. And it takes a very strong person to come and talk to other people in the industry and to be vulnerable enough to want to learn more. So I am so proud of you Aww. And your family that's here supporting you. It's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I want to conclude this episode with a quote from Maya Angelou about mentoring. She said, "In order to be a mentor and an effective one, one must care. You must care. You don't have to know how many square miles are in Idaho. You don't need to know what is the chemical makeup of chemistry or of blood or water. Know what you know and care about the person. Care about what you know and care about the person you're sharing with. It's my hope that your mentoring experiences consist of people who care about you, as mine has been enriched by people who care about me, such as Christy K. Moore." Well, that's our time, and we look forward to our next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate our audience. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Store, or wherever you consume podcasts. If you feel so inclined, leave us a comment. But please be sure to share this episode in your circle of influence. Until the next episode, I'm Lori Diaz, the Funeral Chick. Remember to serve well, and have fun. Make it a great day.